My name is Kelly Brownell. I'm the director of the Rudd Center at Yale University, and we have an outstanding list of speakers for this session. I'd like to make some introductory remarks, and then I'll turn it over to others who will be speaking. So this is the obligatory disclosure slide. I have none. So I guess I have no relationships in my life. Isn't that what that... All right, this next slide, our children didn't do this to themselves. And then further, this is from a parent. Our kids didn't decide to make food products with tons of sugar and sodium and supersized portions and to have these products marketed to them everywhere they turn. Turns out to be an interesting parent, the First Lady of the United States. So the food companies are being held accountable more than they ever have been before for their marketing practices. And today we'll talk about some of the science of that. Here's an example of how much marketing there is. As you folks know, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is by far the largest funder of work on childhood obesity in the world, devoting $500 million to it over a five-year period of time, $100 million a year. This is an enormous amount of, and this is a godsend to the work on childhood obesity. But let's look at how much marketing there is in comparison to that amount of money. What you're going to see is a red dot that will move around the screen and end up on a day of the year. That day of the year represents the day by which the food industry has already spent $100 million just marketing, just unhealthy foods, just to children. So we go around and around. It turns out to be January the 4th. So there are several impressive things about this slide. One is how long it took me to figure out how to make that thing move around the screen. But then second is that how much child marketing there is. So one can imagine trying to educate our way out of the childhood obesity problem, but you can never begin to compete with what the industry, food industry does. Even if Robert Wood Johnson spent every penny that they had on childhood, on education campaigns, the industry would outmatch them by January the 5th. So there's an enormous amount. There have been a number of authoritative reports on this, beginning with the Food Marketing to Children and Youth report from the Institute of Medicine. Several people who were on that committee are in the room. But there are a number of other papers and reports on this as well. A number of you that are familiar at all with the marketing know the five P's of marketing: product, people, place, price, and promotion. But it also seems to me that you could distill the scientific literature into a different set of five P's that would look like this. That there's an awful lot of it, it works very effectively, it's pernicious, and then it does an end run around cognitive defenses. This is especially true of children. And then when I use the word premeditated, I think of a lot of the end runs that get done around cognitive defenses and end runs that get around parental authority are completely premeditated by the industry. There's traditional marketing that we all know about, but there are all, we're going the wrong way here. There are all kinds of other ones as well. There are terms that the industry uses to describe how they market to our children: guerrilla, viral, and stealth marketing. You can pause for a minute and think about the ethics of this when an industry itself uses these terms to describe how they're marketing to our children. And we live in this funny culture where we believe this is okay, we believe this is okay, we believe this is okay, and the most amazing example I've ever seen is this. So children have become prey for the food industry and the people it represented in marketing, and we're paying a dear price for it. Certainly it's not the only contributor to the obesity problem, but it's obviously important. Those of you who watched the World Series recently may have caught a glimpse of this in the outfield in the San Francisco Giants baseball park. So there are a lot of these things that are just surrounding us now that didn't used to exist. The product placements are really quite impressive. In the American Idol show, at one point those glasses, Coca-Cola glasses, showed up in the front of the judges. That was said to be tens of millions of dollars exchanged between the Coca-Cola company and the show just for having them in there. The show changes, the judges changes, the number of judges change, but what stays constant are the at least there's some consistency in this world, those Coca-Cola glasses. Cereals are an example of the food marketing that goes on. Just about exactly a year ago, led by Jennifer Harris and my colleague Marlene Schwartz at the Rudd Center, we released a report on the marketing of breakfast cereals to children. And they were contained in this particular report called Cereal Facts, and today we're releasing the results of a fast food study that took place over the course of a year. And that's, the synopsis of that is contained in this brochure that I think most of you have been given as you entered the room, but if any of you didn't get it, then we can, you can get them on your way out. But this was really a noteworthy study, and Jennifer Harris and Marlene Schwartz will be talking about that today. It's an example of the marketing that goes on. There are lots of nutrition claims and health claims on products, so help support your child's immunity would be an example of this. There are interesting partners now in the effort to get rid of some of the negative food marketing. And the Smart Choices program that was developed by the food industry is an example of how this played out in a very interesting recent way. Smart Choices was a program where industry created a set of nutrition criteria for its own products and then allowed itself to be awarded this Smart Choice label to go on products that met its own criteria, and so products like these became Smart Choices. This strained credibility of a lot of nutrition people and even some government authorities, and several things happened in a really, really short period of time. But one thing that we completed was a study done by Christina Roberto in our center at Yale, who took Smart Choices products, took 100 of them. These are products that had been considered Smart Choices from the industry, taken right from their website, and then used a nutrient profiling model that was developed by scientists at Oxford University that assigns a score based on the overall nutrition of a food to see how many of these 100 products would make it according to an objective standard of nutrition. What she found is that almost 2/3 of the Smart Choices products labeled by the industry failed to meet the criteria that would be established by an objective standard. So this was an obvious abuse by industry, a labeling process that was awarding a symbol that implied health, implied that it was not just the industry doing it on its own, but the government was somehow involved, and doing so in a way that may have come as detriment to the public's health. So a number of things happened over a very short period of time with this. Over a 6-week period in 2009, first, there was a critical New York Times article about Smart Choices that came out just about the day that, that the program was announced and Smart Choices products began appearing on the shelves. The Connecticut Attorney General launched an investigation into Smart Choices and sent out demand letters to the industry and the American Society of Nutrition, which was given money by the industry to broker the Smart Choices program. The word subpoena was thrown around in this discussion. Misleading, deceptive advertising was used in the language of the Connecticut Attorney General. And there were a number of other attorneys general that were right behind the Connecticut one and thinking about doing something about Smart Choices. The Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration held a phone call, an open phone call that was very critical of Smart Choices shortly after that, and Smart Choices closed down. This was a remarkable victory. Forget what Smart Choices itself might have been doing to public health, but this is a sign that somebody is watching, that no longer can the industry get away with doing things like this, and the legal authorities will look the other way. And all of a sudden, a whole new group of potential change agents, the state attorneys general, were there looking at this, thinking about whether they had authority and jurisdiction to take action. And this was a historic development, at least in my mind. And the fact that the industry pulled this program so shortly after it was launched was a sign of how important the media coverage of this was and how important the legal authority action was on this. And I believe that the Connecticut Attorney General was probably the most powerful change agent out here. So there's this arresting reality, if you look at the literature on food marketing directed at children, in that it seems like something really needs to be done. I can't imagine there are many public health or nutrition people who would argue this basic point. The question is, how do we go about making change, and how can we do it given the protection of it by the First Amendment of the Constitution? So we have an excellent group of speakers who will be addressing these issues today. And among the things that we're going to talk about is, what does the science show on this? How much marketing is there? What effect is it having on children? Is there targeting of it to vulnerable populations and the like? One of our speakers will be Professor Frank Chalupka, and you see his credentials there, but one of the best known health economists in the country, somebody who's done excellent work on tobacco and more recently on food related issues. It's nice to have economists involved in this. Jennifer Harris, who's the Director of Marketing Initiatives at the Rudd Center, will be producing the main findings from the fast food report that, as I said, is being released today. Marlene Schwartz will also be talking about features of that report. She's director or deputy director at the Rudd Center at Yale. Shariki Kumienika will be speaking. She's from the University of Pennsylvania, well known to all of you for her work on various social demographic differences and rates of obesity, what might be done about it. And she's going to talk about targeted marketing today. And then Mary Story, Associate Dean and Professor in the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota, will be our discussant. She's in a unique position to discuss this issue because she's written a great deal about the issue of food marketing directed at children and was a member of the Institute of Medicine Committee that released that report that I mentioned earlier. So the key issues today will be how much marketing is there, how is it coming at children? It used to be just television, but it's obviously different these days. Who's being targeted? What's the impact of the marketing? Is industry self-regulation working? And then what can be done to change that? So we have to ask ourselves, how much of it is there? What can be done about it? And who are the key change agents? That's where somebody like the attorneys general come in. So I'd like to end there.